As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
Hey, it's Zuko and Kayla from The Wake Up Call. Enjoy your podcast, but when you're done, don't forget about us. We have a radio show. We try to bring a smile to your face every morning.
We also talk to some of the hottest country stars of today, and we like to share some good news with That's What I Like.
Because Lord knows that's hard to find. When you're done podcasting your podcast, listen to us at 92.3 WCOL.
Set your preset on your radio right now, and don't forget you can listen to us online on the iHeartRadio app.
If there's something I need, I don't already have. Get it from a good friend. If there's something I need, I don't already have. I know I'll get it from a good friend. If there's something I need, I don't already have.
Hi, everybody. It's Jamie Lee Curtis. You're listening to the Good Friend Podcast, presented to you by iHeartRadio. It's a podcast about friendship, sort of the good, the bad, and the ugly, the triumphs of friendship, the immense connection and emotion of friendship, the laughter, and occasionally the tears. We explore it all in an unscripted, very free-form way with many, many different guests, some I'm very close friends with, some I've never met. And I hope that you will take away from it something that connects you to your friends and that the ideas that we talk about can maybe be taken into your own friendships. So sit back or take a walk or however you listen. I hope you enjoy it and stay tuned. This is starting very formally. It'll be the first formal introduction that I've done. Normally, we're just laughing. Hello, everyone listening. I keep wanting to say watching, but it's not watching. It's listening. It's called a podcast. I'm new at this. I'm 63. It doesn't matter. You see, I'm an old dog learning new tricks. Welcome to the podcast, Good Friend, where we discuss all things friendship. Good, bad, ugly, complicated, easy. A lot of people have talked about ease in friendships. My guests today officially are Samantha Ronson, and I was going to call you Violet Gray, which just be like, maybe I'll call you Violet from now on. Cassandra Gray, who are my friends and who are friends themselves and special friends.
Is that what we call it in 2021?
I'm asking you. This is, you're the guest. I'm the official asker, and you're the apparently official answerer.
Yes, I would say that is correct. We are friends. I would even say best friends.
Yeah.
And also significant others. Mm-hmm. And emergency contacts.
Yes, that's the commitment, is the emergency contact. Do you have it listed under ICE in your phone?
No.
Oh, okay. So just so the uninitiated listener knows, you know, if you put your significant other emergency contact in your phone under ICE in case of emergency, that's so if somebody opens your phone or can get to your phone without having to know who to look for, they look for ICE. So my husband is in my phone is ICE. So
ICE, baby.
Yeah, sure. Too cold. I know. Sorry. Couldn't help it. You know, I'm wearing earphones. You're not. And Samantha Ronson, besides being my friend, is also professionally, as the kids say, a DJ. Do you have like a DJ name?
Yes, DJ Samantha Ronson.
That's your DJ name.
Yeah, I never came up with anything clever.
I'm down with DJ Samantha Ronson, but you are a DJ by trade, by profession, and you wear earphones. So I've seen you do this thing, which I'm about to now do. You guys can't see it who are listening, but I'm about to flip them down for a second. And then I've also doing the thing where you take one of them off the ear.
That's what I do.
I'm new at this. This is the sound of earphones. I've never worn earphones. I always found it was a sort of affectation for women my age walking with earphones on. And so it's been very interesting for me to wear them. I do get into the sound of my own voice.
You wear them well.
Thank you. It's not good with short hair. I'm finding. I'm just saying, I don't know. My bangs don't know what to do. You know what I mean? Because there's a thing. It's like a headband. So my bangs kind of get.
Well, here's what you have to do. Here.
Okay.
Don't bring them on from the front like a headband. Bring them from the back.
Okay. As you said, you're best friends. How did you meet as friends, Cassandra?
We met in a town called New York City.
Ooh, heard about it.
when I was living in LA, and I was there on business with my assistant, who is friendly with Samantha, and we were staying at the Bowery Hotel, and at the time I was very happily married and very much in love with my husband. And yet I had a crush, so much so that I told my husband about it, because I had never had a crush on a girl before. So it was a memorable first encounter for that reason. And then, we saw each other a few more times in passing over the next 5 years. And then
I would say we saw each other a few times in the next few months. We just happened to run into each other. And then I don't remember seeing you for at least 5 years.
Yeah. So, and then
you hired me to DJ your husband's birthday party too. It wasn't just in passing.
Yeah.
You gave me a large amount of money to DJ a party at your house.
This is true. We ran into each other a few times, and then I hired her to DJ Brad, who was my husband, my late husband, his birthday, maybe 55th birthday. Mm-hmm. Surprise birthday.
Oh, my husband said he would leave me if I ever threw a surprise party. We actually vowed in our marriage ceremony that we vowed never to give each other a surprise party.
Yeah, I actually was able to surprise him, and it was pretty wild because there was a lot of people there, right? Like maybe 200 people.
I don't know. I didn't count.
but yeah, and then it's pretty romantic in that we came back into each other's lives after my husband passed away, and we were both in the same place at the same time. Fairly remarkably, because neither of us wanted to be in this place, which was a Make-A-Wish Foundation gala event downtown.
In Hollywood.
In Hollywood for the kind of cool kids. Mm-hmm. I felt like it was cool kids.
It was like a hipster Make-A-Wish Foundation gala that I was asked to DJ, and I like, every now and then my manager's like, you need to DJ a party where you actually get paid. You can't just DJ charities, because I don't know how to say no.
Oh, but it's also a beautiful service. I mean, I understand there's commerce, but it's also a beautiful service to be able to create that environment for a charitable organization.
Of course, but sometimes I'd like to be asked to like be able to get involved like for real, not just
yes,
like,
I understand.
Hey, come DJ. So I actually said no. More than once to this event, because I'd been on the road. I wasn't sure if I was going to be in town. And then as it turned out, we were off the road and my friend called me up and was like, hey, can you DJ? I'm part of this thing. And I was like, okay, of course. Of course. I'll totally do this.
Yeah. And so, how can you say no to the kids?
Yeah. And once I knew what, because a lot of times people have a charity event that's not really a charity. Like by the end of the gala and all that stuff, you're like, oh, did any money actually go to these things? Or is it just so you guys can throw a party and have your name? There's some of them where you're like, that's a little suspect. And so I wasn't really sure what, when you hear like, it's a fashion show and it's a thing, I was just like, okay, this isn't a real deal. But when my friend called me up and explained exactly what it was like, oh, okay, yeah, no, I have to DJ this. Mm-hmm. And then I got there and I was just DJing the beginning of it. And I turned around at one point, we were in like the banquet area, nobody was there yet. And I turned around and Cassandra was standing next to the turntables and I was just like,
yeah.
Oh, hi.
So I was, newly widowed, heartbroken, shattered, clinically depressed. And my shrink said, you have to leave the house. You have to go places. Just leave the house. So normally I wouldn't go to an event in Hollywood at any point in my life. I agreed to go. The same friend that called Samantha, he's a guy called Drew Elliott, our mutual friend from New York, called me also and wanted to get me out of the house. So I canceled my, I tried to cancel. Anyway, the point is that I got there, she got there. Neither of us wanted to be there. As soon as I got there, it was a room full of hipsters and I was very uncomfortable. And my friend Drew said, here, I'm gonna put you back here until the event starts where you'll be more comfortable. And it was in this back room where the only other person that was there was Samantha.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that, you know, I've been married 36 years and I interviewed Chris on this very podcast with his lifelong best friend, but I could have interviewed my husband because you're right. If the relationship is anything, is that you're friends, you know, as we get older and as everything changes, it is the friendship that stays connecting us. It's not as much the physical life or your interests change, but the friendship stays. And so it's interesting. I'm happy to be talking to two people somewhat in a newish relationship. It's a couple years, 3 years?
Three plus, yeah.
Three plus. Okay, you're almost through high school.
My longest relationship by probably 3 years.
Okay. Well, so before this relationship in friendships, Samantha, you are a twin, and you have a fairly big family. It seems like you have a big, close-knit family.
Yeah. So I don't really have a lot of friends, just family.
Exactly. But when you were little and creating friendships, you know, we all make friends in school and stuff. What happened with you early on in life? I know, I mean, we've spoken of this a little bit just outside of this conversation, that you and your twins by nature are friends.
Yeah. I mean, Charlotte was actually more social than I was. We went to different schools. So she had her little clique of girls and I was kind of always a bit of a loner and a reader. the nice way of putting it. I was just like a nerd and I stayed home and read books. Mm-hmm. And Charlotte had her friends and, you know, in any other world or any movie that would have been like, I would have been bullied and she would have bullied me. But I think the only reason I survived high school is because she was cool and had my back. So even though we didn't really hang out that much and I was definitely annoying to her, she was so incredibly loyal that I think to this day, she could literally like hit me in the face with like a 2x4 and I'd be like, but she was so nice to me in high school.
Well, high school, by the way, I think is the real, it's brutal. For most people, high school is just brutal or it's the greatest time of their lives. And they chase that high school feeling for the rest of their lives. It was the nightmare for me. It was a nightmare. So I think that's a common thread here, a common theme that I'm hearing is that high school friendships, as much as little kid friendships are important, high school and college, those really formative years where you start to become who you are. You're much less the imprint of your parents, and you're much more some beginning of individuality, your own mind. You're being opened by education, literature, books will, you know, crack you open. What about you, Cassandra? When you were little, what was your sort of friend connections when you were little?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that we've ever really talked about my childhood much with you, Jamie, but I had a very unconventional childhood.
I knew that.
My mother left my father when I was a baby. So it was me and my brother, and she remarried, and I had a stepbrother. So I had two older brothers, and we moved around in like gypsies for the first 12 years of my life. So every couple of years we moved, and we lived on a farm in the Smoky Mountains. We lived on an Indian reservation in a teepee. And so by nature of moving around so much, I started to make friends, and then I would have to say goodbye to the mm-hmm. friend, which was sort of okay when I was very young, and really became a problem. You know, when I was sort of 8, 9, 10, I would be heartbroken because I would make a close friend, and then we would have to leave, and I would never see them again. And you know, from what I remember, I just wanted to hang out with my brothers. So I think that's my first relationship with a friend would be my two brothers were my friends, you know, when they let me. So then in high school, speaking of high school, I went to live with my father, who always lived in San Francisco, where I was originally from and was born. And he lived in the same house. I spent holidays and summers there. So that's sort of, you know, where I grew up. And I went to live with him in high school, and I was homeschooled my entire life until I was 14. And then went to high school. It was my first school experience.
So you weren't around a lot of school children, obviously, if you were homeschooled. You, as you said, you had your brothers. And Samantha, you had your twin and then other siblings. I also, by the way, I had an elder sister, my sister Kelly. And for all intents and purposes, she was my best. You know, we were total opposites, and yet she was my ally. You know, she, when you're in a family structure and you have close siblings, they are your friends. I mean, even if they are required to be your friends because you are just by nature related to each other. I have a lot of friends who have siblings that they're not close with and don't consider them friends. And we're lucky if we have that.
I have a theory about this.
Okay, let's hear it. It's the show about friendship, babe.
I think you're either close with your parents or you're close with your siblings. And I find that most of my, obviously you can be a bit of both, but most of my friends who had like dysfunctional families growing up are super close with their siblings. And my friends who had like the mom that like made them cookies and all that aren't necessarily as close with theirs. I mean, my parents were always gone. So we had nannies, but I feel like my friends who are close with their moms aren't necessarily close with their siblings.
Do you reach out to your friends? I mean, are your friends the first? I mean, it's interesting because you're in a relationship and you're friends. So you guys go to each other for a lot of the stuff that a lot of people go outside of their romantic, you know, emotional relationship. They go outside of it to find what they need from various people in various areas of their life outside of their unit. So it's interesting how much do you guys bring each other?
I mean, I don't really, if I couldn't tell you a friend that I'd spoken to really in the last year. I mean, I have Annabelle, my younger sister, and Charlotte, Mark. I have people that I love that I have been friends with over the years that, you know, for maybe birthday things. I've never really been a best friends person.
Right. So what you're saying is your family are your friends.
Yeah.
And what about you, Cassandra?
You know, because I don't have a lot of family, I have a few chosen members of my family, and I have a very close friendship, 20-year-long friendship with a woman called Carol. She's super, super smart. She was a journalist and worked for Peter Jennings for a long time. And then her husband also died, and her best friend at the same time in a plane crash. And she then wrote a memoir that was a really great book. And then
New York Times bestseller.
And the New York Times bestseller, 16.
Wow, you're like the good, like, support color commentary, Samantha. Yeah. You have the good, you come in with all of the salient details and information. Where did you meet Carol?
So yeah, Carol, I met in New York City when I was living there, and I kind of picked her up at a party, and it was a after party to a movie premiere. And I started talking to her, loved her, and wanted to really impress her and seal the deal. And at the time, I used to play, sort of the coolest thing about me was that I played high stakes poker in a game with all men. I was the only female player. So I took her downtown, because we were uptown, to a poker game where we stayed there until 1 o'clock in the morning. And then I had one of the other poker players take her home in his Maybach.
Yeah, baby.
You know, we have kind of parallel lives, because she also lost her husband to cancer. And it was a similar sort of 5-year battle like I had with my husband. And she had just lost her husband maybe a couple of years before I met her. And she had never had that, she was very serious career very early on, super nerd, and married, and never had that kind of carefree New York in your 20s kind of experience. Mm-hmm. So she recognized quickly that she could have that with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun together.
I didn't know you played poker, by the way. Do you still play?
I don't. I don't play anymore.
By choice?
By choice, yeah.
Not by law. You haven't been like forbidden.
No, not by law.
Well, I'm imagining, you know, guys in, you know, police uniforms saying like, yeah, you're not allowed to do that here.
Yeah. At first it was very glamorous, like I described. And then it turned into me playing video poker. Until, you know, not sometimes 9 in the morning. There could have been, you know, substances involved in that experience. Mm-hmm. No longer glamorous. And so I haven't played poker in about, I guess, 15 years.
Wow. This is new information I'm processing. I'm counting cards right now. I'm trying to figure it out.
Play poker?
No, but I am friends with people who play poker. And I played in one poker game at someone's home where I was staked. They needed somebody to fill the table. Somebody had gotten ill. I stepped in, and I'm not a good card player. My sister Kelly is like total killer. And you play hearts with her, she will eviscerate you. And I like see things and I'm like, oh, I have, like, I get you guys know me a little bit. I don't have a good, like, oh, nothing's going on face.
You're an actor.
I understand. But in that world, I'm not. And by the way, I don't have any game theory. I'm not good with numbers. I am not good with games like that at all. I don't like crossword, but I'm like not that person. But I agreed to sit in on this game, and I didn't know what the F I was doing. Not a clue. And I remember a lot of high-powered very wealthy people in my industry were there. And as I decided to emulate my husband, who's very quiet, very serious, and he has the greatest poker face you've ever seen in your life. So I decided to just sort of be Chris Guest. And I showed up at this house and I ran into somebody. Somebody ran a studio or something. And they were like, "Hey, Jamie, wow, you played." And I just looked at him without smiling and went, "Yeah, just a little." Nothing. I didn't say a word. And then I walked up to the house. There were other people there. And again, people were like, "Wow, hi, Jamie." I mean, people I worked with. I mean, it was, you know, and I just smiled. Very little, like little thin smile. Mm-hmm. Hi. And I didn't even know where you're supposed to sit. And I watched that the guy before me flipped over a card, and that determines your seat at the table. So as soon as I knew where his seat was, I did the math, a little bit of math, and figured out which seat I had. And then I just didn't move. And I, you know, in the second hand, I went all in. I made a huge bet. And what happened, which was amazing, I went all in on my second hand. And the guy sitting across from me, and I've learned this later, that apparently the worst thing in a poker game is to not know someone, because you just don't know their tells. You don't know anything about them. And I didn't give up anything. I sat there, and you know me, I'm really friendly. I'm like really affectionate. And I sat there and I just thin smiled him. And this guy stared at me for the longest time. And then, you know, obviously I think he folded at that point. Anyway, by the end of the break, where you combine the two tables to one table, to the final table, I was the chip leader at my table.
What?
And I made the fatal poker error. I called home. I called home and I was in a closet. I was like, "Hi, I'm winning. Oh my God, I'm winning." And all I heard was this: "What time will you be home?" No enthusiasm. No, "I'm excited for you, honey. Way to go, babe." None of it. It was, "When will you be home?" And I was like, "I don't know. I mean, I could make it all the way out the table." And I hung up the phone and, you know, went to the table and gone in two rounds. I was gone. But that's my poker story. I've never played again. I'm not a poker player. I don't have a poker face, Gaga. I don't have a poker face. I'm who I am.
If there's something I need, I don't already have, I know I'll get it from a good friend.
We'll be right back with more Good Friend after this quick break, so stick around.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
It's the Breakfast Club, the world's most dangerous morning show.
Hey!
Angela Yee is kind of like the big sister that always pokes you in the forehead.
That's not how it goes?
That's not how anything goes.
Yimby's really like a robot. One of the best DJs ever.
Believe that.
Charlamagne is the wild card.
And I'm about to give somebody the credit they deserve for being stupid.
I know, that's right.
What is wrong with you?
Listen to The Breakfast Club weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 106.7 The Beat. Columbus's real hip-hop and R&B.
Friendship. So we've also been exploring now as the conversations have happened, you know, friendships that have needed to either be amended or let go of. And as we get older, we are starting to understand that there are often times in our adult lives where we have to let go of people, that friendships become toxic, friendships become dangerous. Do you guys have any experience with that? Samantha was just about to say something.
You know, when you're a kid and your parents like put you in a play date and you don't necessarily, you parallel play.
Yeah.
I realized that most of my 20s and 30s, I was just parallel playing. Like all my friends were basically based on the fact that we were all in the same place at the same time. Like either our parents were friends or this one, and we just known each other forever. And then you're like, oh wait, just because we've known each other forever doesn't mean we have to stay friends. Like doesn't mean we even like each other or have anything in common. And then, you know, what really killed, I would say like 70% of those superficial friendships was social media and the last, I would say 6 years of politics and being so disappointed in so many people who were too worried about their brand to speak up or say anything. Social media has changed a lot of friendships for me. You know, it's like, you remember that Polaroid campaign, like watch what develops. Mm-hmm. You know, it develops narcissism and you start to see like all these people, you're like, oh, okay. This is what you're interested in. And this is what feeds your soul or this is the kind of thing that you care about. Great. Cool. I'm happy for you. Just you do that over there and I'm gonna do me over here. And I think a lot of my friendships especially when I stopped drinking too, when I wasn't just going to bars and hanging out and when I was done DJing, I was actually just going home. I realized like, oh yeah, we weren't friends. You were just like there. We were just in the same place for so long that we just, it's like this like simpatico or whatever it is, you know, you're just like, you know, and I realized that most of my friendships were just not really worth putting the time into once I moved like to the west side of LA and all my friends were in Hollywood, and I would say like maybe 2 or 3 ever made that trip.
Mm-hmm. Well, that says a lot, you know, I mean, it says a lot. And parallel play is actually a great way of describing it, because I do think people kind of get on parallel tracks and they're not intersecting. And I think really when you say the word good friend, a good friend crosses from the east side of LA to the west side. It's just what they do. People show up for each other. We know each other, the three of us, and it's called showing up for each other. You have to. It's not possible to have a friendship with somebody if you're not showing up. If you're just, as you said, in a parallel universe, that's not connection. That's nothing. That's just
showing up a lot.
Yeah. I heard on another podcast, because now I listen to podcasts, because it's a new way of getting information, which I find interesting. It was called Life Examined. And they had this fantastic, I wish I knew the woman's name, forgive me for not saying it. She's a scientist, an English woman. And she was studying the generation that I raised my daughter in. You guys are younger. And Jules is a young boy, 7, 8 years old. And you know, my youngest Ruby is now 25, just had their 25th birthday. So I don't have young people, but I raised my kids in a generation where I like to refer to it as the good climbing Brandon generation, where parents would sit at the park and the child would climb the structure. And both parents on the sidelines were like, good climbing, buddy. Good climbing, Brandon. Way to go. Come here. High five. Give it up. Oh, yeah. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. And it was insane the way we filled them with this omnipotence that they were the king of the universe. And this woman has done a study talking about the most that this generation is the depressed generation. It's a big, big problem of depression and loneliness. And I think they refer to it as the loneliest generation, even though we have all the social media that you just talked about. You have all of the billions of people, and yet people are lonely. And she was describing that when she did studies and she interviewed this generation and said, what is the word to describe you? One word. It was not friendly, loving, generous, thoughtful. The word that was most used was unique. All about the I, the uniqueness of me. And I thought that was very telling. And it's difficult to make a friendship if you're focused on your uniqueness and not focused out into the universe, which is what I didn't know we were doing, because I was from the generation whose parents didn't pay attention to them. And by the way, I had perfectly fine parents. I'm not going to slag off my parents here on my podcast and be like, yeah, they're horrible. You know what I mean? They were parents, but they didn't pay attention. They didn't know my friends' names. I mean, one of my best girlfriends to my mother, you know, 5 years before my mother died, she would go up to her and go, Janet, it's Debbie Oppenheimer, Jamie's best friend. I mean, you know, my parents just didn't know my people. And so I think our generation, my generation, again, I'm older than you guys, was to say, I'm going to pay attention to everything. I'm going to watch every move you make. I'm going to look at every drawing you make and say, oh, look at that drawing. And it was too much of a reaction to my upbringing. And now I think, because I've seen you guys as parents, and I've also seen this new generation where I think people are starting to look outwards. What you were talking about, Samantha, about social media, where if people are so afraid of their brand and they can't be open because they're afraid of losing something, then that's not friendship.
Yeah.
So
I just remember when I was a kid, I feel like I just started making ashtrays because then I would at least get used the things I made in art class. Because otherwise my mother was like, oh, it's great. You hold on to that though. My mother wasn't like, oh, you're going to be an artist when you grow up. She was like, yeah. When I started making ashtrays, they got used. But I feel like some of these kids these days, they just like, I tweeted it the other day that I was like, some of y'all don't have siblings and it shows. Like, someone needs to bully somebody. Do you know what I mean? It's the only way that you like, otherwise all these people think that they're like the smartest, the funniest, the prettiest, the greatest, and you're like, someone needs to tell you, like, somebody that loves you needs to tell you that, like, that's not it. But only your siblings can tell you, Chip, because you know they love you. You know it's coming from a nice place. They're not just trying to like destroy you, but like maybe you're not Picasso. Maybe you're not the next, you know, Einstein. Maybe you're just you. And I think we've kind of, that's what friendship is telling you with kindness and love, no. If there's something I need, I don't already
have. We'll be right back with more Good Friend after this quick break.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side.
Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
We know each other. We have now met each other, the three of us, and other people. And we are starting to really explore all those friendships. It's how we know each other. And I used to, like, honestly walk up to people and go, will you be my friend? I have, people know I'm in recovery. And, you know, when I was early in recovery and I would see all of these best friends, you know, celebrating each other and talking about how they used to get wasted together and now they don't, and, you know, how happy they all are. And there were a couple, not a romantic couple, but just a best friends couple who both, two women who had both gotten sober. And I was so lonely and didn't know how to make friends in that, in recovery. I don't know if it was, I felt separate because I was famous and whatever it was, whatever it was, there I was. And I actually called them both and said, can I be friends with you guys? Which is to me the sort of delicate underbelly of friendship that is so crucial, which is why I think we all feel very close to each other. Even though we all haven't known each other that long, I feel like you guys are my good friends. And it's because of that vulnerability, which I think comes, which is a component of friendship. What would you think of that, Cassandra?
You're also, let me just throw this in there, by the way.
No, you throw anything you want. She was looking kind of pensive, so I didn't know, it felt like she had something to say, but go.
I was thinking this the other day, separate from this podcast situation, like how grateful I am that I get to be your friend. Like, you're honestly like one of the kindest, most generous, caring, thoughtful. Like, you know, like every now and then I'll just, you know, open the mailbox and there's something from your address and I open it up and it's a nameplate of my new dog that, like, I mean,
they need to have a nameplate on their crate,
but they don't.
And, yes, and they do, Samantha.
But exactly, like, you're just always so kind and so sweet and so thoughtful and, like, you know, things that, it's, and you have a full life. You're busy. You have a home. You have all this. You have this new My Hand in Yours business. You're doing this podcast. You're literally one of the busiest people. You're one of the busiest people I know. And you find the time to do that. I am doing absolutely f*** all, and I can barely write. I gave Cassandra a card for Valentine's Day, and she's like, "Yo, you didn't write anything on it." I was like, "Was I supposed to?" Do you know what I mean? Like, I nothing but time on my hands. And there you are, just juggling plates. And
okay. Well, I'll edit all that out. I'm joking. I won't. But I'm saying that's very sweet of you. But it's because I've also shown you my delicate underbelly, because I have extended my hand to you and said, will you be my friend? When we first met, I walked up to you and hugged you.
I was terrified.
You were terrified. That's fine. But it's
none of you, just of hugs.
Whatever. That's fine. And I understand that now. And now I approach it much more carefully. And now we can't hug anyway. We can't even look at each other. I'm surprised that we still know each other because, you know, the restrictions. But to me, it's that delicate underbelly. It's that real sense of, you know, I marry people and I have married people. And I use the marriage ceremony that Chris and I were married under, written by a woman from the Judson Church in New York, a woman named Lee Hancock, who's no longer here. But she was a reverend and she married us. And in the ceremony, she says, you have chosen each other to combat the loneliness of human existence. That you have come together to do that, to combat it, to be each other's ally, you know, to be an ally. And so I do feel that the loneliness of human existence, the vulnerability of human beings is really ultimately what is connecting us all, even though, as you said, we're all sort of busy and have ideas and talents. Really, it is that. So that's, to me, the real connective tissue here. Cassandra, what were you going to say? You had an idea.
Well, I think that recovery that we have in common and really the ability to be vulnerable and open and trust each other is what creates that long-lasting bond. As long as you have that trust, it's like that whole thing of, you know, trust makes everything simpler. And you're not trying to navigate, like, what do you want from me? And what is the transaction here? And it's about we authentically want connection and just to be able to really be seen. I don't think that friendship is real unless there is that vulnerability and trust. I've had a lot of friendships or relationships that were not built on trust, that, you know, you spoke about cutting people out of your lives or of your life. And, you know, that's, I'm also a person, and I know you as well, and Samantha certainly being a Leo, that really values loyalty. And I struggled with that for a long time of how can I cut this person off if I am loyal? Mm-hmm. And so I would continue to engage in these sort of dysfunctional, unhealthy relationships, largely just because they were not built on trust. And it was very, you know, they're all very transactional in an unhealthy way. And until I recognized that, you know, cutting someone off or creating healthy boundaries, mm-hmm. when you don't have trust or authentic connection is actually the most respectful thing that you can do in that relationship. And that conflict we learn from. You know, I think I had a really close friend that passed away. I wasn't very good at saying no. So I would often say yes to everything. And then I would flake. Just not show up, or, you know, cancel at the last minute, or you know, little things like that. And he sat me down once and he said, you know, this is not a real friendship that you don't value my time and that you are always, you know, not showing up or flaking. And it's okay to say no, but say no. Mm-hmm. And I always remember that because it's like, that's the thing about being built on trust. Like, you can have healthy boundaries, or you're not available for someone, or you can't do something for someone, as long as you are clear about it and why. And then I think that you have this mutual respect that you can rely on one another. And then I think, you know, if someone isn't ready to have a healthy relationship that is authentic or you know, is they can trust you, then, you know, you can, they may come back around. But in my experience, it's been really important to me to either create boundaries or end relationships if they feel like, you know, unhealthy, that we're sucking each other's energy. And I always say that there's that Oprah, you know, she talks a lot about how she is so concerned about the energy that she puts out into the room. And then she also realized that she needs to be very concerned with the energy that she allows in her space and her orbit and her field. And that there's so many energy suckers out there and you don't even really know why. But I think that, you know, I recognize that a lot. Now I can recognize that pretty quickly now versus before, when I had a lot of, you know, inauthentic relationships, friendships, business relationships. And I just, at a certain point, I didn't want to have that anymore.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, I think that that's certainly the experience that I know Samantha's had with you and I've had with you and the other sort of friends that we have in common. Yeah. We really can trust each other. And, you know, I get such energy from you and from Samantha. And I really recognize that. Like, I can recognize that, you know, you're around people often, sometimes people, you know, that you work with or that are your friends or family that you're around all the time. And, you know, taking the time to say, hey, am I getting energy from this person? Am I giving energy to this person? Is just life changing.
And it takes time. I mean, that's, you know, I'm impatient. So I want everything, you know, I saw Chris's picture. I said, I'm going to marry him. I married him, like, it's so fast. And, you know, it's 36 years later, I've started to go, oh, interesting. That's who you are. You know, I'm learning to take time. I remember, you're going to laugh at me, but a Violet Gray approved person, Michelle Pfeiffer, when Michelle was a young actress, I did the same thing. I called her because we were in competition. Not that I ever got those jobs, but you know what I mean? Like, we were in competition always. Her name was always on every casting sheet that I was ever up for, always. And I called her and said, can we be friends so that we're not enemies? Because I don't want to hate you. And if I know you, I'm not going to hate you if you get the part. If I don't know you, you're going to remain this unreachable foe. And you're not. I'm guessing you're a decent person. And I'm you know, I maybe that's the beginnings of even me starting a podcast, was during COVID, you know, where I was alone with my husband a lot. I did start to really wonder about friendship and how important it is to me, to others. And you can't get there without saying, here's my hand. Will you hold it? Will you allow me in, allow you in? And, you know, I could say you guys were like, whatever, we can all create the reasons why you wouldn't want to be my friend. It's just human nature. We're going to go, oh, I'm not, you know, I don't like moisturizer enough until now. But do you know what I mean? Like, you're run a beauty business. I don't wear literally anything on my face. So I didn't think I would be, but you're so not somebody in the beauty business. I mean, look at you. I mean that. You aren't a painted person. You're not a fake painted person. You, I'm, you know, you're in the music business. I'm not, I listen to music every single day from the moment I wake up till the moment I go to sleep. There's music playing, but I'm not a musician. I married a musician who practices his instrument, you know, all day long, every day. And I would be like, well, how could I relate? But the truth is, I'm so completely relate to you, Samantha.
We're all just humans, and what we do or it still comes up. You sent me this, is it Jose Gonzalez, Leaf mm-hmm. on a Cave or Leaf of mm-hmm. a Cave? You sent me that. I always loved it. Like, you would gift the song as opposed to just sending a link.
I didn't know how to do any of that. I've only now understand you can send it. I like to buy it.
Same. I like to support artists. I like to pay for it as well. I'm like, here, have my money. But, you know, you connect. You know, when you're a kid or you're an adolescent, you know, we all bond over people we hate or things. You know what I mean? They're like, that felt like so many of my friendships were like, when you're young and you're like partying, you're like, hate that girl. She's like, I hate her too. Let's be best friends.
Right, right.
And like, and then... needless to say, those friendships don't necessarily last, because maybe the only thing you have in common is that you hate that other person, but you maybe want to.
Which is really just jealousy of that other person, probably, or just some attached thing about that other person.
Probably not justified, but when you make friendships with people over things that you love or like in common, then that's generally a better way to start a friendship, because it's by sharing light as opposed to darkness. And I feel like so many friendships that I had when I was young were like just based on like, we both hate that person, but like, that's it. And that is not enough to start a friendship. But mm-hmm. you know, when you said you wanted to be friends with Michelle Pfeiffer, it's so much more fun to root for people. It's, you know, you mm-hmm. want to have that. And I love having friends that I can get excited for and be happy for. There's enough in the world. Like, it's nice to just find the things that you love in common, and that's enough for me.
Yeah, I think, I mean, my relationship with Carol is, you know, not to like rank the different relationships in my life, but I think it's such an important relationship that I have this best friend that we can talk every day, multiple times a day, and then sometimes go, you know, 3-4 months without talking, but we're always connected. We've always been connected this whole time. And I'm so grateful for that relationship, because, you know, throughout everything, she's been there, and it doesn't have the threat of a romantic relationship. You know, romantic relationship, there's always a threat of that person may not be in love with you anymore, and then they're gone.
So basically, you rank your friendship with Carol above ours.
Well, it's just different. it's not as vulnerable because there's not that romantic piece,
right? Which is a whole world of its own.
Yeah.
I was talking about exposing that delicate underbelly. That's exposing a whole other delicate underbelly of ourselves to someone else. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, a lot of times I'll speak to women usually, but men too, and especially during the pandemic, where if they're not with someone, they're so lonely. And they think that they need, you know, a romantic relationship versus a friendship. People don't seek out friendships in the same way that they seek out this romantic relationship that they think they should have.
Jamie does.
Well, Jamie's is an exception. But typically, I think that seeking out a friendship, pursuing a friendship is so courageous, and it can be so much more meaningful than a romantic relationship. I mean, like Bumble, you know, Bumble, of course, Bumble, the dating app.
I don't know.
Well, there's
I love how she says, of course, like, yeah, Jamie's on all this. I mean, they advertise everywhere. I mean, I don't know how you notice that. Oh, okay. So Bumble, there, you know, there's a handful of dating sites, Tinder, Bumble.
Yeah, Match. No, I've heard about Tinder. I've heard about matching.
And Bumble has matching. You know, they have a division that is about finding friends. Like it's like BFF or something, which I thought was, you know, just telling of the time that we live in as people, you know, young people, particularly I find that they're not as set on, okay, I'm going to, you know, grow up and meet someone and fall in love and get married. You know, they value other platonic relationships also as being an important part.
So the algorithm that they use is based on your likes and interests. And it's very similar to the dating apps, except there's not sex involved. It's I'm looking for a friend who I will then build a friendship with. Wow, that's fascinating. I've never heard that. Well, thank you, ladies. I've enjoyed this so much. I could continue this for another couple hours. But this is what this is about. It's exploring friendship, you know, in all aspects. And you both have brought such interesting insights. Both of you have completely dropped some big thought bombs on us, the listener. And I will think about all of them. And, you know, it's an undefined world about friendship. And we're trying to explore it and not define it, but sort of give it different aspects. And you guys have brought a really interesting perspective to it. So on behalf of my listener, I like to believe I have won. Like I try not to be like hubrisy and think like I got a lot of them. So I would like to thank my one listener that I know of for sure. Are you saying you're two listeners? So now I have three. So now we're strong. We're three strong. But on behalf of my listeners, thank you, Cassandra Gray and Samantha Ronson for being good friends. And God bless everyone listening and stay safe. And
make good choices. Don't smoke cigarettes.
And don't smoke cigarettes. There you go. All right. Peace, everybody. Good Friend is produced by Dylan Fagan and is a production of iHeartRadio. Our theme song, Good Friend, is written, produced, and performed by Emily King.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.